You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You already love the Mixing Music podcast, but what if I told you that there are over 250 exclusive episodes just waiting for you? That's right. On our Patreon, you get ad-free technical deep dives every single week on mixing, mastering, and production. If you want more knowledge, more techniques, and zero fluff, head to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start leveling up your skills today. Hello and welcome back to the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host, DK, and with me, as always, is our lovely co-host. What does this say? What is this?
So it says Luviometer.
Luviometer.
Lu, the measurement of loudness. L-U. And VU.
Luviometer. All right. Yeah.
But if you want to sound it out a little differently, it says
you have L-U-V-U. Yeah, it says L-U-V-U. So I'm like, love you?
Aw, do you? Aw.
Luvu. Hey, dude, you know what's crazy? I just realized Wendy's is, I messed it up. Never mind.
Okay.
I was going to say, I just realized Whataburger is the only fast food chain that starts with a W.
Is it? I have to look this up now because Wendy's sells burgers.
Wendy's nuts hit your chin, brother.
I'll take it. Not the nuts, but I'll take it.
All right. That was okay, whatever. yeah, see.
Like
I said Wendy's.
Like,
I said Wendy's at first.
Yeah, that's why I was like, wait, you just. Wendy's has burgers. When these nuts hit your face. That's a good one. I honestly didn't see that one.
That was good. All right. Anyway. that was the stupidest intro to the podcast. Welcome to the Mixing Music Podcast. Lou and I have been busy, which is good.
Yeah.
And you got flown out to Hawaii this last week or two.
Not this weekend that just passed, but the weekend before.
Yeah. Do I see a little sunglass tan on your face?
A little bit. My wrist definitely has like one of those watch tans where you could clearly tell where the watch was sitting. Dude, I went surfing for 2 days while I was out there. So I haven't been surfing in LA for like 2 years, but yet the first moment I touched down in Hawaii, within the first hour, I rented a surfboard.
Of course.
Yeah.
Waikiki is like famous for like longboard, like the easy catch waves.
There was a an easy crowd of like 50 people per like cluster of surfers, which was kind of cool. Just kind of at one point, I'm not going to lie, I fell asleep on the surfboard. That was nice.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Been to Europe as well, and some cool stuff happening. And let's see. But let's get into today's episode, which is the topic is kind of interesting: the gear we regret buying and what we'd buy instead. Now, this is interesting. I don't know if it's going to be regret so much, but I think it's going to come from like a business tactical perspective, like things that you can buy instead. What should you be getting? Because and we're going to do a caveat here. The caveat is this is for a professional mixer, audio engineer, producer, right? This is not for the home hobbyist, the guy that's just doing this, the guy or girl that's just doing this for fun.
Although
that has a day job.
Overlaps.
There's going to be some overlap here, but we're going to, if there's any nuance that we're going to address, it's going to be about the fact that we're doing this trying to create a career or trying to
continue a career.
Yeah, continue a career or start a career. Just think about this as a career path rather than just like a hobby.
Mm-hmm.
Because once this turns into a hobby, then you can just do whatever the heck you want and get whatever you want and just have fun with it.
Yeah.
But there are some more tactical things that you should be getting. For example, like a website, right?
Yeah.
A website would be a good place to start, something like that. Anyway, let's talk about also another thing that we're going to talk about too is that, Lou, you are doing live sound now, a lot of live sound now alongside in studio mastering. And I do mostly mixing and mastering, right? And the one thing that neither of us really do that much is recording.
Not anymore.
So example.
Yeah.
So for example, like one of the first things that we could talk about on our list is analog hardware, which in the beginning, even in the middle stages, is not helpful nor necessary for mixing, mastering. I don't even know even for live. I don't even think for live.
It's funny because there is a culture of analog in live. Like there's actually like Red Hot Chili Peppers engineer still mixes all of their shows on an analog mixer.
But that's not necessary at the beginning. Like
it's not necessary. In fact, it's completely inefficient. But
yeah,
once again, there's going to be purists about cars. There's going to be purists about instruments. There's going to be purists about analog gear.
Cool.
Yeah.
So, we could talk about that. There's going to be other things too, like if you
software is always going to be a big one.
Yeah,
way too many fucking plugins in the world.
Maybe instead of saying like things that we regret getting, because I don't know.
Things that maybe we talk bought about. That we think could have been better invested somewhere else.
Maybe instead of that, like there could also be a running list of things that were really worth it. For example, one of the things that I wish a younger version of myself kind of understood was just like QuickBooks Online, just tracking expenses and income and doing it automatically. And then, you know, preparing all of my expenses for taxes and income for taxes. And then just doing that into TurboTax is like really great. It's fantastic. So
do
like
stuff
like
that. Do we want to keep it more gear and investment oriented, or do we want to take over encompassing broader ideas?
Well, I mean, I was thinking like career wise.
Okay.
You know, as a mixer, we should be using like some sort of like way to track income and expenses, right?
Yeah, totally.
And whether that's through QuickBooks or something else, but I would have, that I should have gotten a couple years before I got like an analog channel strip.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would have saved me a little bit of time hassle. But yeah, so let's get into it a little bit. Lou, what are some things, is there anything that you're thinking of off the top of your head?
NS10s.
Ooh.
Yeah.
What do you mean by that?
Everything. I'll be honest. Even people who like NS10s know they sound like shit. And most people who want to do the research on NS10s will know that Bob Clearmountain brought them out as home stereo speakers to reference off of, not to mix off of. You would mix into them to hear certain things and see what kind of, I guess you could say, sounds worked best on these home bookshelf speakers. Because once again, they're bookshelf speakers. But at no point in NS10's history were they ever intended to be studio monitors by Yamaha. They are glorified bookshelf speakers. And I'm not trying to say that like anybody that uses them is dumb or whatever. No, that you can use whatever you want. You could use a Bose speaker at that point, and that's my whole point. You know that I've bought NS10s three times over. The first time because I was recommended to get NS10s because it'll make my mixes better, which was not the case because all I listened to was stuff that I really didn't like, and it didn't actually reflect anything of what the common speaker or sound source sounds like nowadays. The technology's gotten so much better, so much more compact. And for that same reason, if you wanted to go by that logic, you can use an Amazon Alexa. So it wasn't what I was hoping it would be when I first bought them when I was like 20 years old. But there are people like Blink-182's mixing engineer and Pierce DeVale's mixing engineer who do like a lot of rock where they're like, yeah, but you can tell the mids apart a little bit better. And I'm like, listen, if you spend enough time in front of any speaker at all, you would get to know what it's showing you and how to differentiate between certain elements. But like me and you both use Strauss right now. And the thing that we both have communicated that we really like is like the transient information, like how you can hear the microtonal changes between compression and saturation and how it affects the way the information is moving. And that's cool. But not everybody is a Strauss fan either. But I bought NS10s three times over. First time, it was a disillusionment. And then the second time was like, well, maybe I didn't give them enough of a chance. Maybe the room was the issue. Maybe this amp was the issue. Maybe it was this and that. It still just sounded like shit. Yeah, I could tell what people were talking about. Like, it's all mid-forward. But you could also use an Aventone mix cube for the same reason. Or just get any speaker and take the tweeter out, and you almost get the same exact sound outside of the crossover point.
I was going to say, take out the tweeter.
Yeah, but that's virtually what it sounds like. If your tweeter is broken, you've got an NS10. And the third time over, I bought them because somebody was selling a really, really clean set, and I was like, it would be nice to have them at the studio in the mix for people to want to use. But they still sounded like so much shit that it was just easier to put any other speaker in its place for people to want to listen to and everything. Do I regret buying them? No, not really, because it showed me what I don't like. You know, and I think understanding what you do and don't like is very important, especially what you don't like, so you can kind of avoid certain genres of things. But to ultimately say that in order to have better mixes, you need a shitty sounding speaker, without researching why it's so popular is just it's a bad run in that direction. You know, you've started off wrong already because instead of doing your research about what is supposedly making it good, you'd find out it's just a bookshelf speaker. It was a home consumer item that got so overinflated in popularity because a really, really good mixing engineer, Bob Clearmountain over at Apogee, was like, you know what? Let me just bring it to the studio. Let me just plug it in, set them on the board. And if it sounds good there, it should sound good just about anywhere because it was the number one selling bookshelf speaker at the time. It wasn't a great speaker. It was a high volume sales speaker for home consumer electronics. It was never meant to be like this extreme hi-fi world-class thing. It wasn't meant to be the thing that showed you your mid-range in a way that no other speaker could. Now, with that said, it has paper cones and all that, so they are very fast, so they do show you transients pretty well. I will give it credit for that, but trying to find a set of NS10s now that are actually sonically matched over the course of, 40, 50 years? You know, trying to get that vintage set that's supposedly a perfect match to each other, it's non-existent. So that money, that $1,000, you could have got yourself some IN8s that actually sound significantly better, show you way more top-end detail, show you way more low-end detail. And I would argue have a decent enough mid-range to actually show you what's going on because of the three-way design. I'm not advocating for Kali Audio. I don't own any Kali Audio, nor have I ever owned any Kali Audio outside of DK having some IN5s in Studio B in the mix. But I would have IN5s 10 times over any NS10s any day. And I think if you were to do a blind test to people, don't tell them what brand, don't tell them what speaker, don't tell them what size woofers or speaker design, whether it's three-way or two-way. If you just put them behind a fucking sonically neutral curtain that you couldn't see behind and played NS10s and IN5s, everybody would rather choose the IN5s every time.
Yeah.
NS10s are not great.
Some of my favorite mixing experience I've had on cheaper speakers, like really like Guitar Center speakers, is mm-hmm. the 6-inch JBLs that you had, like the 306s.
Yeah, the LS-306s.
Yeah, I really like those, actually. Mm-hmm. But, okay, so I think we should expand the kind of the episode, because in general, we're talking about more about, you know, thinking professionally first, so think about financial investment and tools mm-hmm. rather than like toys.
Yeah.
Right. So what are toys versus what are some unexpected tools? Like, so we've already talked about website, you know, financial tracking software, for example, like, is a desk going to be categorized as a tool or a toy? And I would argue that a desk, it doesn't have to be a super nice high-end, like Sterling Modular.
Or Argosy.
Argosy, right? But having a desk is more of a tool because at the end of the day, if clients are coming to your studio, so if you're doing a lot of like producing, recording, or mixing in person, then possibly the desk will become something more of a tool because aesthetics does play somewhat of a role in the game of building trust with clients. And there's going to be other things too, like getting a couch for a studio where a lot of people are going to be coming in, or like repainting, like putting in the effort to repainting the walls in that bedroom or building acoustic panels is going to be a lot more worth it than a single piece of outboard gear. Mm-hmm. Then there's like the idea of like, even within the realm of interfaces. So if you're getting an interface and you are trying to record a band, right? So let's say you need like 8 inputs because you're trying to record some drums. 8 is a good number. It's not too many. Yeah. It's not too little. You know, it's a decent number. Would you rather get like some sort of a Focusrite with 8 inputs? I think that would be much better of a financial decision at the beginning and middle stages than to get something with no preamps and then buying 8 pieces of outboard preamps.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Even if you do go with cheaper like Warm Audio or other like clone type preamps. So these are all things to consider. I do think that if you are seeking a professional career, a lot of the things that you should be considering purchasing, and we've talked about this many times in the past, so I don't want to over-repeat myself here, is some of these fun toys type stuff like analog gear compression, saturation, even like preamps, outboard preamps and stuff, the fun stuff. If you're not in recording, if you're not doing a lot of recording, these are things that you should do when you make too much money, like mm-hmm. as a tax write-off, as a expense, as a business expense. You should buy those towards the end of the year when you need to spend more money to save money on taxes.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it comes down to. If you aren't making enough to even have to pay taxes, you know, or in the risk of having to pay taxes, don't really focus on rent, focus on just getting through your day to day, getting your food, you know, focus on that stuff, not on fun gear. If you are recording, there might be some ease of like, what is that called? Like
offloading some of the work to get to a certain quality.
Yeah, some just like making life a little bit easier type stuff.
Yeah.
Like outboard preamp into a compressor, like at least one chain of that for vocals might be nice. Mm-hmm. You know, it might be pretty, if you're doing vocals every single day, that might be worth it. It'll save you time, get you higher quality. It'll bring clients back possibly. But even then, I would never, ever, ever recommend anything like brand name. I would stick to like Warm Audio and used Warm Audio, even like possibly, mm-hmm. or like other
if
things.
If it's strictly for aesthetics, yeah.
Yeah, possibly like anything comparable to that. Obviously, it's got to be in good working condition and clean and not like broken or distorted or anything like that.
Actually, but it's a very bad look, at least in my eyes. If you go to somebody's studio and they have a bunch of gear and then you're like, oh, let's run it through this. Oh, it doesn't work. Let's run it through this one. That one also is a little finicky. It's got some noise to it. It's like, oh.
Yeah, but if you have clients asking you, I don't know. I feel like if you have a client asking you for specific things to run through, then that's
I'm just saying like
flag,
a new client.
Depending on the situation.
Like if a new client found you because you bought the gear, you know what I mean? It's already a red flag. But I'm just saying if their hopes and expectations was to see you use it, it's kind of a bad look if it doesn't work.
Yeah. So avoid that by just getting like clones anyway, because then they won't care.
Yeah.
And then yeah, so let's see here. I honestly think people should spend more money on computers. Computers and monitoring, for sure.
Yeah,
Acoustic treatment, computer monitoring.
Yeah.
I think those are things that people should be spending more money on.
I think something that, this is case by case, but let's see if you agree with me. Something I do regret buying, and it's not a piece of gear. It's not a piece of software. I don't know if we can classify it as a toy because in this case, it becomes a necessity, but it's a necessity I wish we didn't need. An ashtray. I just don't want smoking in the studio. Just don't smoke around me while I'm working and stuff like that. I don't care if you want to get high and shit. Like, I might smoke with you.
It's like a California problem, I feel like.
Exactly. It's definitely not a Utah problem. Well, actually, I don't know. I've never been to Utah, but I'm assuming it's not.
Yeah, definitely not a Utah problem.
But, you know, it's one of those things that I understand that trying to build clientele early on is one of those things where you try to open your doors to just about anyone, make anyone feel comfortable. But there comes a point where people feel so comfortable that there's a disregard for, I guess you could say, a sense of knowing where you are and what you're there to do. And some people want to smoke in the studio. So like if you were to work with Snoop and you ask Snoop not to smoke in the studio, you're probably going to get laughed at by him and his team. But if you're working with new clients and it's kind of, let's just say it's your home, your personal room and this and that, and you don't like it to smell like smoke, you shouldn't be buying ashtrays for your clients. You should actually create the boundary of saying, hey, I don't mind if you smoke, but I would prefer if you just smoked outside. You know, if you can do that for me, that'd be super appreciated. And just kind of communicating where your boundaries lie, because not every studio is a smoking studio.
So you know? Now we're kind of blending topics a little bit. So you should be getting things for your studio for the purpose of what your boundaries are and the type of demographic that you want to appeal to.
Exactly.
Which starts off with something free, actually. This is like a Googleable thing. If you Google like avatar, like a mm-hmm. client avatar creation sheet or something like that, something about that, you can have like a little piece of paper that kind of like gets you to think about who your ideal client is. Okay, my ideal client is like, is it going to be a man or a woman? Like think of one person who is the most ideal client. Like, are they a parent? What hobbies do they have? What age range? Like what are their interests? And you kind of create an avatar and then you should focus on purchasing different things or building your business and your brand around servicing that avatar, just like mm-hmm. a representation of your ideal client. Getting things like if your ideal client is not like someone that smokes, then I wouldn't even think to get an ashtray, right? But if you're like trying to for whatever reason, you're trying to be out here in California and trying to invite a clientele or like a style of music that you really love to work on that does invite a lot of people that smoke, then that is something to consider, you know, kind of to remove friction and to, you know, be inviting to a specific demographic. And I think that that's actually a lot more intentionally done than unintentional.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you should be thinking about this. This is kind of like the same idea. So think about this from the, I always love to joke about this, but like, I had a friend years ago. He's like, bro, I just cannot find a long lasting relationship with a woman that I really like. You know, he's just complaining about how single and lonely he is, mm-hmm. and how he's so unsuccessful with these relationships. And I'm like, hey, man, where are you picking up? Like, where are you going to find these women? Mm-hmm. He's like, you know, I'm doing everything I can. I'm going to the club and like going. I'm like, bro, you describe to me the ideal woman. Yeah. All right, she's smart. You know, she's possibly like a good mother.
Possibly.
Know, all these things. And I'm like, do you honestly think that even any sort of a majority of the women that you described is at the club? No, dude. Yeah. What are you, dumb? Like, you should be going to the library or hanging out at random churches.
Or coffee shops.
I'm just kidding. Random churches is crazy. Or what?
Dude, if somebody went looking for dates at random, keyword random churches, it's like, I'm going to the mosque today. Now I'm going to the Catholic church.
Like,
I'm going to a Mormon church.
But the point is like, this is a really great analogy for what we're talking about, right? Like,
yeah,
if you don't even know what you want in a future, like in a partner, mm-hmm. and whatever you're into, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then what's the point of even going? Like, this is not one of those situations where you throw spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah.
This is very, very easy to think about it a little bit and to target exactly. It's like a game of probability. And how do you increase the probability of finding people that respect you and your boundaries, that pay you on time, that do whatever your needs are, right? Whatever your thing is into. Some people are really into toxic people. Go to the clubs. I don't know. You know, some people are into like short flings. Go to whatever. No judgment there, but just like, the point is, think about who you're into, describe what you're into, and then think of places and settings where you'll possibly meet those people.
Mm-hmm.
And listen, if on your list, you're thinking of like someone that reads books, someone that wants to be a mom and like is looking forward to having kids, the club ain't the spot.
Yeah.
You know, and so the same thing with like anything in the studio when it comes to aesthetics. Even to gear and what you're getting, you got to think about things in the terms of your avatar. Like, who is the clientele that you are working for? Like, that you want to invite? That you are, so like, if you're an EDM head, mm-hmm. You that might even be like, I'm trying to work with more EDM artists. That might even come down to not just the aesthetics of your room and which speakers you purchase based on like the culture of EDM culture and like mixing and stuff. But that might even come down to like the plugins that you buy and that you mm-hmm. use, right? And like the education that you source is different too. So like if you're an EDM head, you might go for more of a spaceship look, or you might get more synths if you're trying to invite producers in instead of getting a compressor. But if you're like me and not necessarily like you just want peace in your life because you've had way too much chaos, then you change it to just like a Zen style studio where it's a lot of natural light and natural colors.
Yeah.
Right? With some weebish stuff to scare off
cool people. I can atone and agree to that one.
Atone is crazy.
Yeah, atone because agree. I'm like, listen, man, I've committed the sin of accidentally putting too much Pokemon related stuff or Funko Pops and stuff like that, and people look at it and be like, this guy is a nerd.
Yeah.
But and I that also might be agree awesome. That it's also helped find my own demographic, which is why I was talking about the ashtray, where it's like the demographic isn't people who smoke or don't smoke. That's not the demographic push. It's creating a space where it's like, hey, listen, I'm happy to work with you if we can meet each other eye to eye. You know, I have no problem with that. Listen, come enjoy yourself, do what you want to do, but just as long as you respect the space, we're totally cool. And that actually builds the culture of the studio or business that you have and the type of clientele. Like you said, the avatar, it's like in the avatar, never did it say smokes or doesn't smoke. It just says respects the interior of the space.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, so that can be flexible, right? Instead of saying smokes or doesn't smoke, you just say, like, is that person respectful?
Yeah, put an ashtray outside, better yet said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you know what? That's up to you. So defining that and being as specific as possible. Again, if you Google this or even ask ChatGPT to help me come up with an avatar, like ask me a list of questions to help me think of one, that might be a really good use case.
You know what? That's a good way of using ChatGPT. I didn't think of that one.
Yeah. And I think that that's really important. There is something to be said about like I like things that give direction with some flexibility. Like I don't like hardcore absolutes. Like you do not do this. You do this. I do like some flexibility, but an avatar is something that is pretty flexible and helps you kind of think about things in a way that is flexible to how you want to interpret those things. Yeah, and then there's also, I mean, again, something along the lines as well to address the nuance. Like one thing that you shouldn't really be doing is creating a new persona to fit your clients. Like I think for the long-term game, you should be authentic. And what I mean by authentic isn't trying to be authentic on purpose. Like who am I? What am I doing? No, just like do what you would do if nobody was like, if you're a gamer, like, and you like game stuff, put some game stuff in the studio, like whatever. Yeah. People are going to be repelled by you, are going to be like, you know, find you. Intrigued by you. They're going to be feel invited to your space or they're not going to like it at all. It's not your job to make it so overwhelmingly neutral. So it is inviting to everyone. It's most of the time, I think it's okay to put in a little bit of personality. The only exception to that rule is if you are a studio owner and you're trying to build a commercial location where multiple different engineers, and even then that you can absolutely put in some personality, but I wouldn't go so super duper heavy on that. Because you will have a bunch of different engineers. I would just focus on a single kind of aesthetic, whether it's spaceship or Zen or Indian preserve. I don't know, whatever. Like just some safari jungle, you know, whatever aesthetic you want to do. And then, kind of keep it accessible in that sense. Themed, but accessible. And not just like a bunch of personal toys and memorabilia that makes any engineer come through feel like they're invading a personal space. You don't want that.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
You know, the one space that I actually found very pleasing recently that just got posted, I guess, on Instagram, they go by Seltzer Sounds. And they made a Garden of Eden type of aesthetic.
Yeah.
Where they put like Austin's a bunch of greenery and everything. Yeah. And I saw that and I was like, you know what? That looks really nice. Like I would just want to be in that room just to be in the room.
Yeah, Austin Seltzer is actually a really great engineer and a decent friend. We've met each other a few times. I actually should hit him up. But yeah, he just redesigned his entire studio. It's Garden of Eden and Slytherin themed. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's like at first glance, it kind of looks like Lord of the Rings fantasy type, but it's like, it's not quite it. Yeah. You could. I actually messaged him. I was like, Garden of Eden? He's like, exactly. Right. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, just do what you want to a certain degree is the point. Things that I do regret buying, like, let's see here. If I could, okay, this is a little bit controversial.
Mm-hmm.
Do I want to say this? I'm thinking about this. I'll say this for the sake of content. If I could start my career over and never get any Waves plugins, I would not get any Waves plugins.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I could learn to become completely unreliant on Waves, then I would, if it's a personal space. If I have mm-hmm. to go to other studios, and if I'm bouncing around studios as, like, a big city engineer, then I'm going to have to learn some Waves. But if I have a personal space, which is almost everyone listening to this podcast, then, no, I wouldn't get Waves.
Yeah, I'll be honest.
I would learn to not rely on it.
I don't think... Like, I have Waves because clients sending me sessions with Waves in them. But I think that's it. Like, I'm trying to think. Like, I don't reach for the C6 anymore because of Pro Q4 or Pro MB and things of that nature. I don't reach for any other, like the Shep 73 is cool, but it's, like, once every, like, 50 to 100 sessions that I reach for it. I don't really like it. Now, to touch on the live sound side of things, remember I told you there's kind of like this live sound culture of like, there is analog purist in live and all that kind of stuff. There is people who are, you know, fuck analog, go digital. Why would you waste your time with analog? You could do the same amount of work faster, blah, blah, blah. Cool. Well, Waves has also touched base into the live sound game for a while now. They have their LV1 console, which is basically you provide your computer. It runs the whole thing with DSP and blah, blah, blah. So, like, you're purchasing a computer for them, but, you know, it's loaded with a certain amount of power. You have to get servers and all that to run their plugins. And it looks almost like a Pro Tools channel strip where there's, like, insert points and stuff. Yeah, there's the side of live, kind of like in studios where they're like, oh, analog hardware is king and, you know, this and that, whatever. There's people who are like, oh, I'm all in on the Wave stuff because they just released their LV1 Classic console, which is like 16 inputs, 16 outputs, whatever. It's all in the Waves network, but it comes with a huge touchscreen and you can play with the CLA 76, CLA 2As and all that kind of stuff and use them live. But I'm in the train of thought of like, hey, man, if the only reason your mix sounds good is because you have the Waves plugins, whether in studio or live, is it really the Waves plugins or is it that you know what you're doing with them? Once again, going back to the whole idea of like compression is compression. I have never once ever gotten a complaint about my mixes live with the console that I have, and I don't have any of the premium plugins that I could buy for it that are built into the console. I still have the stock everything on it. I get a peak-based compressor and an RMS-based compressor. Those are my two choices of compression on this console, and if you know how to dial in a compressor and know what you're listening for, you can get it to sound just as good as any of the Waves plugins. So it's kind of funny.
It's like, weird because it's not anything against Waves.
No, it's
like,
not. It's
I like Waves.
How much
I
are
pay
you buying into
too.
A product or a brand?
Yeah, I buy Waves and I use Waves too, but it's just like one specific technical thing that I would be like, yeah, but like, they're fine. Like, they sound great. But if I could just become reliant on, for example, like Plug and Alliance, which is like Plug and Alliance has much better tools that sound possibly even better and is like half the price.
What's cool about Plug and Alliance that you don't really see a lot with Waves nowadays, but there is some things to be said about Waves, which Waves at one point, like their biggest seller was like the CLA stuff. They got Chris Lord-Alge co-signing Waves. Yeah. My Chemical Romance. Cool. Coldplay. Cool. Fucking Muse. Cool.
Yeah. And like questionable business strategies as well. That
exactly. You got Plug and Alliance working with like Maurer Applebaum on the oven. You've got Plug and Alliance working with, what's his name? The mastering, the Cascade, Phil something, I forget, but basically Plug and Alliance is actually working with people who are actively working and kind of at the top of their game in their career at this point and designing things or collaborating on hosting certain things that they believe to be standouts or something that's uniquely filling a void versus I feel like with Waves, we're just kind of getting the same plugin rewrapped under a different facelift, you know. For instance, there's only so many parallel processor plugins that we really need with a different face on it.
Also, you have to buy updates every time you update your software and stuff.
Oh, that's the biggest qualm I have with that.
Plugin Alliance doesn't have anything to do with that. No. A couple other boring things that people don't want to hear, like buy a domain. It's 12 months a year. Mm-hmm. Get your name. Just buy it on, like, I think like Google Domains is gone now. It's now just Squarespace Domains. It's $12 a year for a custom domain, unless you're trying to buy more of like a specialty one, which they can be more. Just get a domain. If you want to build a website, like there's a lot of different options. I think I use like a, I'm not necessarily endorsing this, but there's a website that I'm using called like Card. Let me actually look it up. Very simple, one page. Yeah, CARRD.co. I'm not sponsored by them. I think it's like $25 a year for multiple website designs that you can have. Like, so I switched all over my websites because Wix was like getting really expensive, hundreds of dollars a year for just one website. And now it's $25 a year for all of them at the expense of a lot of premium options that I don't use for as a Wix user.
To be honest, that sounds like something I need to look into.
Yeah, so that's really great. You know, there's a lot of different options, a lot of great stuff. Things that you should be considering as well is payment systems. It's not something that you necessarily pay for. Like, for example, if you take debit and credit cards, there's going to be a processing fee, 2.5% plus 60 cents or whatever it is. That fee is almost always going to be worth the frictionless user experience of being able to just use a card. You know, it's, you could, we could talk about Visa monopoly and how unethical it is, and like they these fees can cost more year over year, but at the end of the day, it's entirely worth the user experience and the smoothness of the experience if you have options. So don't just use Zelle and Venmo, also have like everything available. Have Zelle, Cash App, PayPal, a card, bank transfer if you want. Just like make sure that it's frictionless. Just have everything so you can say yes to whatever they want to do.
And have that information available on the invoice. I get paid so much faster when all the information is available on the invoice.
Talking about invoicing, one way that you can invoice that I find to be reliable that I've been using for years is waveapps.com, WAVEAPPS.com, waveapps.com. You can start a plan for free and they will take, they accept online options, but you can, it's great for invoicing. This is almost what I use every single time with invoices, sending out invoices. They can either pay through the Waves, which is how they make their money, is by collecting a commission from each payment, like a payment processor does. But it just can automatically send out invoices. But even if you don't send it out via Waves through their automated process, you can download and export the PDF and it just formats the invoice for you to send out via email just to do and collect payment manually. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Again, that's just one of those things that I do recommend. Now, in the past, it depends on how much you want to systematize. These are kind of like baseline things. Like you can use Notion for free or Trello, some sort of like these project management type things, like to-do list type things. Like you don't necessarily have to pay for them, but if you're going to pay for anything, it's like this is the sort of stuff that you should be paying for if you're trying to pursue a career. You know, the fun, don't get distracted by the fun things.
Yeah.
Another thing that I was going to say too is it's those that have narcissistic tendencies that think that they actually might be smarter than someone else that get caught up in schemes and gambling and like that get caught up in scams. So for example, like I have. I don't want to share too much, but like I have a line. The men in my family have been I have a lot of narcissistic tendencies. So my grandfather, for example, was constantly like, oh, it's like, if there's a secret way that you can make more money than anyone else, and he thinks that he's smarter than everyone else, is like, all right, so I'm going to do it. And then it turns out to be a scam. All right. So it's like, don't get caught up in get rich quick schemes, or like, if you have this, if you pay for this, this is going to make you more money. Don't do that. You don't need to do that. There's not like a ton of that, but like, this also goes into the sense of, you need to have this to do well in this industry. You need to have this specific piece of gear, this specific thing. This is the secret sauce that makes my mixes really, really good. This industry has a lot of that. And there's something to be said that a lot of people need to feel validation by thinking that they have some sort of secret sauce. This is like a self-coping mechanism to make up for some sort of need for validation or insecurity. Do not get caught up in this stuff. It's not real. There are people that have never thought about what role they play in the world or anything about validation that just makes shitty stuff on their phone. And those songs sound better than some of the people that are overthinking this stuff. So like, that's like a big point too. Don't get caught up in the consumerism. We are producers. We are not consumers. So don't become a consumer in this industry of producers. Do not do that.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I'm not going to like downplay, like there's a lot of people in this industry that we can name that you are probably thinking of people that are doing exactly what I'm talking about right now. Just saying that this is the secret sauce. This is the reason why I'm doing so good. And this is like, this is everything. And there's a lot of people that I really respect that say this sort of stuff. So I'm not going to say much more. But objectively, these are coping mechanisms. This is not objectively true secret sauces. Okay?
Yeah.
That's just what they are. And anybody that actually knows anything in this industry, stay silent. There's a, I think it's a Taoist proverb. Those who know do not speak. Those who do not know speak. This is one of those things. People that really know what's going on, don't say anything. Don't have to say anything. But I'll say it out loud once for y'all. So don't get caught up on that stuff. Thinking about another thing too is like, as far as systematization goes, like things that you should be getting is anything that helps you get to clients faster, more reliably, and more professionally. So this may include like Dropbox Replay, which is a specific version of Dropbox to like for clouds, a specific cloud service to send files to clients for notes and stuff like that. Or we are sponsored by FilePass, obviously. So go on to makesymusicpodcast.com/FilePass. FilePass will, you can even lock downloads. So clients, if they haven't paid, you can lock the downloads, or you can send an invoice through FilePass. Oh, they have to pay with card or PayPal in order for the download to then unlock. Right. This is, I've ever since using FilePass, I have not been scammed a single time. Someone that steals my mix and runs away with it. That has gone to zero ever since I switched to FilePass, what, like 5-6 years ago now?
Yeah.
It is absolutely, maybe not that long ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. Not a single time has that ever happened. And the, like, again, invoicing systems, email systems, like taking a lot of these things are also free, like taking the time to look professional, to respond. I don't give a shit how much you're figuring your shit out, how much you're coping with depression and stuff. If you want to do well in this industry, you have to be a communications savant. I'm telling you, in a world of neurotic, chaotic creatives, people who are constantly ghosting each other, you will stand out as a professional if you just respond quickly and precisely.
Yeah.
So whatever you need to do,
just communicate it. Don't hide it.
Yeah. So like if you need a domain to then have a professional email that you compose and respond with, contact@myname.com, whatever. If that's what you need to do, do it. Right. But these are things that are much more important than... the point is, when you're working as a professional, a lot of you have to think about what you need versus what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And most of the time, especially if you're just mixing or mastering, you don't need most things. So just think about that. There's a lot of YouTube videos out there that kind of promote this narrative of you need certain things to be professional. We're just the counter narrative to that, that addresses the nuance. Becoming financially responsible and learning to have impulse control when wanting things is going to make you more money in the future and help you stay in the industry, because you don't continue to blow your bank account by just buying unnecessary things, will help you maintain your career and possibly your future relationships. If you aren't already in one, then any preamp that could ever serve you, any specific interface or compressor could ever serve you.
Hey man, my C800G with a 1073 into a CL1B into my Symphony is everything I need.
You know, it might be. Might be. But anybody that has that probably earned their way there.
Yeah.
And it's okay that you want specific things. That's another thing, too. To your point, like, if you have a goal, and if you're like, I really want this, the big part, and maybe the good nuance to address at the end of the episode, is if you work for it and save for it and can pay in cash, like, do that.
Yeah.
I honestly think that there's a reason why Dave Ramsey is as popular as he is for financial advice. Yeah, there's something to be said about there's healthy debt and you can save some money by using credit cards and getting those rewards or whatever. But that does not help 99% of the population.
No.
The average amount of debt that Americans are in is insane. People are not taught. Like, for example, this is kind of like the rich dad, poor dad type stuff. Like, ever since I was very young, I've always been taught you do not spend money you don't have, even if you have credit cards. So to this day, I have never not paid off my credit card completely ever, right? Every month. Every month, anything that I buy with a credit card, it's paid off completely at the end of the month. I've never, ever, ever missed or been late on any. This is just something small. So I reap the benefits of credit and get good credit score. And had a credit card young because, you know, you kind of know how to deal with this stuff. The difference between like someone that is wealthy or poor when it comes to like general basic financial habits, it's very small details like that. And so we're thinking about this, like, this is way over reductive, but there's a reason why like very wealthy people still, like why Toyotas are still the most common car among the top 1%ers. Toyota Corollas, and then it's like the Ford 150. It's like the top cars among the top 1%ers are like the most average cars ever. There's a reason for that. It comes down to impulse control too. So, all right, Lou, I'm talking way too much and we're starting to get into financial advice, which I don't have any background or credit to give on that.
Sure. Do we want to hop back into things we wish we didn't invest in?
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
Sure. This one's going to be a general one, but if you're investing into plugins over hype of a plugin, it's already a bad choice. I'll give an example of one that I don't personally like, but I know a lot of people do, so sue me. The Jason Joshua, what is it called? Particle? God Particle, I think it's called.
So we're just going to get into specific plugins now?
Well, I mean, we did start off the episode saying we would name things that we do and don't regret investing
fair enough,
into.
Fair enough.
So,
that's a good one. That's a good one. Fine.
Yeah. I know it's a very popular plugin. And I have no issues with Jason Joshua. People can say what they want to say about him. I personally could give a shit because I don't know him. I have no opinion on him. He's just this existence in the world that we all love to be a part of. But he's very successful, and because of that, his plugin's very successful. It kind of, it's just the one-to-one, really. Like, people want to have mixes that compete with Jason Joshua's mixes, so he came out with a plugin that he says replicates everything that he does with his analog gear, and cool. But that doesn't mean that everybody likes that sound, and I'm kind of one of them, because I do notice it does like a huge buildup in the low mids and everything. Like, it's a pretty significant bump, such that, like, if you're slapping that thing on at the end of your mix thinking that it's going to be the extra polish, it just throws everything out of whack. And so it's kind of one of those things that forces you to mix into it, which I think is part of the problem. If you have to mix into it in order for it to actually sound good, chances are that that's more of a crutch than it is a tool. But I think that it does something cool. But I think one of the weirdest parts about it is that when I purchased it, I was like, wow, okay, this guy is saying that it's going to be this good. There's a bunch of people that, whether they were paid or not, to advocate for it online and do video content on it. Cool. I was very interested. I was genuinely interested, and somebody in the studio had used a demo of it when my account was logged into it when I was checking it out, and so I couldn't actually demo it, so I decided to buy it. Fuck it. Hey, everybody's saying that it's great. I haven't gotten a chance to try it. Some of the interns tried it. Whatever. I didn't really like it. I felt like $100 of my account just kind of disappeared because I went with the word of the internet versus my own opinion, and that felt shitty. Buying into hype felt really, really shitty.
Yeah.
Because once again, I have no problem with Jason Joshua. I think this plugin works for some people, and it just didn't work for me at all. So, you know what's been on one computer and one computer only? God Particle. You know what's not on my working computer? God Particle, which means I spent $100 that I'll never get back. I can't resell the plugin. I mean, I'm sure there's a way, but I know that iLock charges you, I think it's like a $50 transfer fee. So even if you wanted to sell it for $50, you're just having somebody pay your transfer fee on a license, which makes it a whole wasted $100. That felt shitty. Now, once again, I'm not saying that the plugin is shitty. I'm just saying that my experience with it is not useful. And yeah, buying into hype, that's the issue. God Particle is my example of buying into hype, but yeah,
also
don't buy things just because people say it's good. Try it out for yourself, or go to somebody's studio. If it's a piece of hardware, if it's a C800, I'm just going to give this example straight out. C800s, I know people love them. I know people hate them. It's $15,000. If you've never used one before and you're buying it because everybody says it's the best mic in the world, please just go to a studio and use it first. And I don't mean just use the one. I mean, like, go to a studio that has multiple microphones, a U67, a 251, a C12, anything in that price range, whether it's $4,000 versus a now $15,000 mic. That's fucking crazy that it used to be like $9,000. You could buy them used for $3,000, by the way, less than 10 years ago. And the only reason they skyrocketed so much was because of the pandemic. Just to be clear on their price points right now, but you used to be able to buy them for $3,000 because nobody wanted them. Nobody wanted them. And so the hype is the reason people are buying them so often, why I put in so many orders to purchase them through different retailers, because I can't order directly through Sony myself. But it's frustrating to think that there's a lot of people that do buy into hype, and it's the biggest detriment, because a lot of people who do end up buying things over hype end up regretting their purchase.
Of course.
Yeah.
So kind of, I've also never, going back to plugins too, I've never met any client or artist that says, I hired my engineer because they have a large list of plugins. So I think in general, it's better to demo plugins and make sure that it's actually usable and you can imagine how you're going to use it.
Yeah.
And demo it first before buying it. But that's kind of like dust stuff. Here's something useful that I don't think, like, as a mixer, I have no reason to buy headphones. And if I'm going to buy headphones, I would stick to one single pair of headphones that I just learn really well.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would buy AirPods straight up.
Yes.
For the same reason why people bought NS10s back in the day, because those were popular and most people listen to that. Yeah, AirPods. I think AirPods is a good use of monitoring. as well. And I would go as far as to say, if you're going to take the time to learn a specific set of headphones, why can't it be AirPods?
Yeah.
Now, the routing might be weird. You have to figure out a way to actually mix on headphones.
It's actually really easy. They make a cable for it. I just plug mine straight into the output of my headphone jack.
For the Maxes.
Yeah. No, with the AirPod Pros, you can do what most people do, get a Bluetooth router.
So there are workarounds, but yeah, in general, I would no reason why not to. To this day, we every once in a while bring up Nels, like a producer that we used to work with a lot really talented. And he's like, he's like, I have to mix on these like wired Apple earbuds.
Mm-hmm.
Like the cheapo $15 to $20 Apple earbuds, the wired ones.
The ones that look like you find them at the gas station for a nickel.
He loves those things. And his mixes were some of the best that I've heard as far as a producer goes. So highly recommend that. Like, yeah, and again, like even as an engineer, like there's really no point. If you're working on speakers and then you want to double check and reference on a second set of monitors, why would you get any other headphone other than AirPods? If you're mostly working on speakers anyway,
yeah,
get AirPods.
Yeah, I think I told you this before, where the reason I bought the AirPod Maxes were kind of two current, two focal points that kind of aligned with each other. I was talking to Jeff Brown because, you know me, I like Little Lab stuff, the Voice of God, and also the headphone amp. And I still got to try that LA-2A compressor that he made because it's really affordable. But yeah, so with the monitor, I always really enjoyed that it had both quarter-inch and eighth-inch jacks. And then I saw Jeff Braun post on Instagram. He's like, dude, this combo is unbeatable. And it was the same headphone amp that I use, but connected to some AirPod Maxes directly. And I was like, wait, you can connect those wired into a headphone amp? He's like, yeah, dude. And to be honest, why wouldn't you? This is basically the NS10s of headphones. I'm like, you know, that's actually a really good point. But I didn't know that there was a way to connect them at the time like that. About 2 weeks later, I forgot my headphones in my pockets and my pants, and I threw them in the dirty laundry. And the next day, I found out that my headphones got washed. So I went to Best Buy, and I was thinking about buying the AirPod Pros again. I was already going to be like $200 in the hole for that, but apparently AirPod Maxes went on sale, and they were like $350. And I was like, you know what? Screw it. Bought the AirPod Maxes. I will say that there is a definite increase in quality of the sound. It's overhead versus in-ear. But if you're going to spend a little more change, at least you can take some solace knowing that, you know, they do sound better. They do factually sound better. But I immediately went to go buy that headphone cable. And yeah, I'm not going to lie. I think that's been the best experience in headphones because I use them almost every single day. Like if I go to the gym, I might wear my AirPod Pros if I'm doing leg day or back day where like I had to lean over a lot because they're a little bit heavy. But anytime I'm at the gym, if you're doing like chest day or like you're doing shoulders, like a lot of upright stuff, you notice that a lot of people are wearing AirPod Maxes or AirPod Pros. I almost rarely ever see like Beats anymore. Like I don't think Beats are selling like they used to. I don't think that a lot of people are buying like Skull Candies as much as I remember growing up. People having Skull Candies, like Skull Candies was almost like the it headphone for a while. But AirPod Pros, AirPod Max, that's definitely like, I want to say at least 50% of the market. I don't know if that number is stupidly inflated, but like I can't go anywhere without noticing even the shopkeepers at an ice cream shop having AirPods. You know what I mean? So like it's just like DK said, it's the perfect NS10 headphone equivalent. And I got to say, man, like I know I'm wearing these. If you guys are watching, I'm wearing these heads that I've been kind of like listening to demoing. And I never bought them. I never reached out to Head or anything. In fact, it was a producer that I know that the artist that I was mixing for invited him to be part of the mixing session so he could see what was going on. And he just opted to leave them with me. You know, just leave them here for me to try them out and stuff. And so, you know, respectfully, I'm going to use that time to get to know him. But I think if I had to choose to spend over $1,000 on these headphones or $500 or less on the AirPod Maxes, I'm going back to the Maxes.
There you go. You can do that.
Yeah.
I don't really have anything else. I mean, obviously, the only thing is like acoustic panels and stuff. Again, build mm-hmm. your own if you're trying to save a buck.
Yeah.
I think the point of this episode is not really, because here's the thing. This sounds really bad. I'm thinking about this while we're recording this episode.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty financially responsible. And so I actually don't have a ton of regrets of things that I wish I didn't buy. Other mm-hmm. than like the occasional, like I bought a channel strip for really cheap. Like I got like a UAD, the 610 preamp with the LA2A channel strip. I got it for like $600 once. Right, $600. And even though I got it way below market price from a dude that was desperate, I don't know if that was still something I sold like a little while later. It just wasn't worth it. So
yeah. Honestly, the 610 strips, I've had a hard time.
It's not a comment on the quality. I really liked it, and I would use it if I had it to this day.
But it's a very
specific
sound.
There's other things for like that amount of money that I could buy that would be more useful, that helps me. So that's the point of the episode, is like, think about things that will make you money and help you smooth your process and remove friction, and not because it's cool. Don't be a consumer. We're our producers. On that note, something that you could invest in is education. If you want more of the Mixing Music Podcast, go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive to sign up to our Patreon and get access to exclusive episodes. We have over 250 exclusive technical episodes that are shorter for you to be able to just blast through and just get access to that for $4 a month. And on that note, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. You already love the Mixing Music Podcast, but what if I told you that there are over 250 exclusive episodes just waiting for you? That's right. On our Patreon, you get ad-free technical deep dives every single week on mixing, mastering, and production. If you want more knowledge, more techniques, and zero fluff, head to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive and start leveling up your skills today.